Listening to Dig Deep. This is the podcast only edition of Dig Deep, and we just finished up the Minnesota legislative session. The governor just announced a couple of vetoes yesterday. Things are a little crazy there. Where do you guys want to begin on this conversation?
I want you, Aaron, and I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this, and
I feel this is going to be pointed.
No, it is, and I'm going to say this, and I realize it's like gratuitous and is going to sound partisan. I really don't mean it as like a partisan shot. I am so happy that Governor Dayton is leaving, because I feel like he has been, especially the last couple, like maybe even the last term, entire last term, just absolutely ineffective. I don't understand what he stands for. I don't understand what he wants. I don't understand what would make him happy. I realize the Republicans are jerks in the legislature and are not going to give him a bunch of wins. But I mean, what I just see like this whole flood of vetoes, and I really couldn't tell you right now what he wants, except not what they want. And I'm even if the DFL wins the governorship next time, I feel like we need someone who's actually motivated to try to find something that will benefit people. You know?
I think the end of this session and really the last several years is a kind of a toxic emotional stew between Speaker Kurt Dowd, who's been Speaker now for coming on 4 years, and Governor Dayton. The two of them have never gotten along.
I won't talk to you. I won't. Yeah, right. It's kind of been almost like juvenile.
I would agree with that. Yeah. And part of the dynamic there is the unique nature of each of them. So Governor Dayton has been around a long time. He's describe him as a sweet person. He came up and he's the benevolent millionaire, you know, and he really cared about helping people in his career and kind of improbably reached this apex of his career later in life as governor of the state of Minnesota. But he's also getting older, and I'd argue he's very stubborn, and he wants to have a respectful dialogue. Well, he speaks a certain way. He's had some health problems, and frankly, the speaker is I would put him more in the cutthroat variety of a politician. He's sly. He's smart. And he sees Dayton as vulnerable. And that's always been the case. Even Dayton got in, and they all thought he'd be toast in re-election, but he ended up winning by a slightly larger margin than the first time he got in. And so they've always been trying to pull one over on him. And he's, frankly, just, I think, this last session, and that's just what I wrote, is that basically Kurt Dowd and Mark Dayton together in their own space said, fudge it, only they didn't say fudge. They were frustrated, and Dayton said, don't send me that omnibus bill with everything in it. Don't do it. I'm going to veto it. Send me the stuff separately, and I'll sign the stuff I'll sign, and I won't sign the stuff I won't sign. And Dowd said, no, I don't want to. You got to deal with me on this stuff, because we've got the houses, we've got the Senate and the House, and we think you should lean our way some more. And so he said, well, basically Dayton said no. The Dowd said, okay, we're going to send you the stuff we said you would veto. Dayton vetoed it just the way, you know, and here we are. And you can say there's a few things I'd argue that Dayton has a point on, and that is important, is that these giant omnibus bills are not what the state constitution intends.
It's a horrible way to do government. I totally agree.
I watched Representative Pat Garofalo from Farmington go on Twitter last night over, like, all night long. Dayton says he's for broadband. I've always fought broadband spending, but I see he put it he vetoed the bill that had broadband funding. So I guess he vetoed broadband. And I just seething over watching this stuff, because he vetoed the omnibus monster bill.
That's really dumb. I mean, that's the kind of politics that just annoys me.
It's gross, because he knows why. I mean, you can disagree with Dayton, sort of just bit the bullet and signed it because there was some good stuff in there. That's literally the Republican talking point. He vetoed it. There was good stuff in there.
Right.
And you know what? I guess so.
It's like dishing you a plate of like cabbage stew and putting an Oreo cookie on the side, and you just say, I'm not hungry.
I saw online.
And you're like, well, you obviously don't like Oreo cookies then.
Yeah, someone made a cake, and then they iced it with the message, find the toenail. You know, Like, sure. Are you going to eat that cake? You know, so I think there's a breakdown in process. And what I talked about this week is, have you ever seen that sport bicycle sprinting?
No.
Okay. So bicycle sprinting, it's like a bicycle race. And the bikes go very, very fast. The athletes are very, very strong. And they can go up to 40 miles an hour on an inclined track, like a racetrack. But they don't just, when they blow the whistle, they don't just race like you would expect. The process of this sport is that whoever is in second, just behind the person in first, coming into the last 200 meters or 400 meters, has a huge advantage because they can conserve their energy and look for opportunities to make their burst at a time when it's strategically vital. So the first 4 minutes of the race are the two guys biking as slowly as possible. In fact, at one point, they actually, part of the sport is standing still on your bike and making sure you don't fall over next to each other, daring the other guy to go first.
Right.
And I feel like our legislature has become this because of the process, because there's been no penalty for waiting to the last minute. It was, I think, getting worse anyway, but under Kurt Daut, it's been particularly pronounced where these big bills don't come out until the last weekend in some cases, or at least the final version of them, the negotiated version of them. And the idea is that we're going to sprint this stuff at the end, and we're not going to show you our cards. You're going to see us coming from behind, and you're going to have no choice. You know, that's why I think Dayton was so frustrated with Daut, was because Daut comes in at the end, sprinting away, saying, this is it. This is it, or it's a failure. It's a total failure if you don't sign my bill. And Dayton, who, you know, we can, you know, I'm not saying Dayton is like the pinnacle of strategy. He's not.
No.
I think that's
my frustration, is that if I felt there was a strategy there,
yeah,
and I actually feel like if Daut felt there was a strategy there,
I think the governor,
you could find a way to. I feel like it's. It's lack of strategy.
The governor got very emotional. And I think, maybe when the first version of the tax bill came through, for instance, there was this moment in the debate where Governor Dayton held an event at a school and said, if you don't give me my $129 million in emergency school funding, I'm not going to sign your tax bill. Basically, give me the money, I'll sign your tax bill, was the deal. And then he had an event at a school where all the kids were there. Like, look at the kids, you know, the whole thing.
Now I need money for kids too.
And I felt like watching it. Like, okay, now I like school funding, and I like kids, and I'm basically okay with the governor's policy most of the time. But this was clearly just him using some of the tactics that Kurt Daut was trying to use on him in previous sessions, and now he's trying to modify them poorly for his own use. And then, of course, the Republican reaction to that stunt, that terrible, terrible stunt, and then they roll in this omnibus bill and basically it just kept getting worse. and everybody involved kept making it worse. Maybe you can tell me, you know him better, but I felt like there was a little bit of sanity coming from Paul Gazelka in the state Senate, a little bit. I think he would have.
I do, but they don't drive the agenda.
But he.
The House drives the agenda.
The House drives the agenda. And right. Speaker Daut, I think, deserves credit as being the driver of the Republican side of the negotiations. And I felt like there was just this toxic two guys who just hate the snot out of each other, trying to negotiate with no shared values, without. Daut had a political strategy. I don't know what his policy strategy was exactly. Dayton, I don't think, had either. A strong policy nor a strong political strategy. And I'm not saying I disagree with the policy he did come up with. I just feel like, you know, what do we then take out and sell at this point? Right now, the only saleable political point is that we're totally dysfunctional. And now the governor candidates on either side and the state House candidates, because the Senate's not up, have to come out and say, "Oh, we'll be better," you know. But are people going to vote? And this, I'm monopolizing the time here, but are people going to vote based on good governance?
it's interesting because you brought up the Twitter tirade. You know, well, you must be against broadband.
Yeah, and opioids, spend fixing opioids and all this other stuff, line by line out of the omnibus bill.
Yeah, the fallout from this kind of ridiculous approach, which I'm agreeing with you is ridiculous. I think I would put the blame, if we're assigning blame, which you didn't really assign blame, but I think the Republicans had a political strategy. Mm-hmm. That now is playing out because you can criticize the Democrats for the governor for vetoing all the stuff that people wanted, including money for kids and schools and, you know, all this like things that he apparently, you know, wanted, but not badly enough to sign the bill. So there's a political strategy. There was also, I think, like a policy strategy, which Aaron described as kind of let's, you know, we're not going to serve you up individual things that you can get rid of the stuff that you don't want. Mm-hmm. Because we have a line item veto, you can do, you know, you're either going to take it or not, because we're going to send you things in packages that you can't line item veto it all out. And the governor, I think for his, you know, lack, I'll say this in like as respectful a way as I can. He's not been, in my estimation, very involved in setting a vision or an agenda. He's been more reacting to it. And I think that's maybe what you mean a little bit by like, what was his policy mm-hmm. approach? That was me saying, I want Governor Dayton to move on because I don't even know who I'm, you know, negotiating with here. I don't even know what he wants. Here's what I get to. We're going to go through a crazy election cycle now where Republicans are going to be able to essentially point to the governor as ineffective, which I think is true, as not having accomplished anything and being really difficult to work with, which is true. At the same time, Democrats are going to be able to point to Republicans as being bullies and intransigent and, you know, pushing their own agenda through, which will play to their base to a bit. But I think we stand a chance of being in a year that should, by all statistical measures, be a blue surge nationally, becoming a redder state. I think at the end of the day, this state is trending red, is becoming more purple. A state that is purple deep now. Blue is becoming more purple. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you told me the Republicans held the House and the Senate and regained the governor's office in a year where at the national level, Democrats should pick up many seats, if not the House, you know, in its entire, I find that to be just bizarre and rather incredible. But I think that's the situation we could be in.
It's possible because of the trends in the state and the way that DFL votes are predominantly now centralized in Duluth and Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the urban centers, and just the nature of how you draw lines for rural seats, you know. So I think there's been a trend, certainly in the House of Representatives, that make it hard. It's going to be hard. You know, it's going to take some big waves for the DFL to reliably hold the House of Representatives for the foreseeable future, the next cycle at least, the next 10-year redistricting cycle at least. And that's going to, as I think, make the state feel more red or more purple.
Let me give you one concrete policy example. I'm plugged into the transportation community, so, you know, people who love transit and da 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 da. My blue friends, my liberal friends from the Twin Cities area, were apoplectic over the Republicans not including any money for transit. Republicans basically said, transit is an urban issue. We have no urban people in our caucus. You know, screw you, transit. You're gone. And they just funded nothing. And so Dayton's veto made them like really happy. It made them like, yeah, you're standing up on principle. Of course, transit shouldn't be defunded. We're better to get nothing than to get this, you know, junk of a bill. Way to go, Dayton. And I feel like there's a wave amongst those groups to say this was like a righteous thing. But then you start to go through the list of other things that I think out here in less like, you know, Twin Cities blue area, I think there's more things in that bill that Dayton mm-hmm. vetoed that are less black and white mm-hmm. from a left of center voter.
Well, the broadband is a classic example, probably a bit more of a liberal issue than a conservative one. But on the other hand, if there's an area where I've seen some ability to convince conservatives to be a little more interested in government spending, I've seen some of that in broadband in rural areas, not necessarily all Republicans, but
Republicans passed a bill with broadband. I mean, that's the whole point.
But that's what I'm getting at, is that that's the gambit that Dayton kind of played, is that there's going to be some stuff that now don't happen. We won't have our border to broadband, a border to border program funded again until next session after the election.
Right.
If the new legislature and new governor
support it. Let me say this a little differently. I feel like the veto played really well amongst urban Democrats. I feel like it will be more ambiguous outside of Minneapolis and Saint Paul.
I think it's pretty much partisan. I mean, it's pretty much partisan how the reactions I've seen. A lot of people are fed up, frustrated that they came to this, blah, blah, blah. People who follow it closely and say, look what they did with that omnibus bill. That really was out of line. They were very derisive towards the governor and mean towards the governor. And so no wonder he vetoed it. And then other people would say, well, Dayton's a haphazard governor who was just making this emotional decision, and he's hurting all these programs that we all support, or would most of us would support. But that just kind of falls back to, you know, what if this whole dang election is just a referendum on Trump? You know, and so there's a whole bunch of variables here, and that's why I say, like,
but it won't we be have, here
when I brought up the bicycle sprint example, where we have a process that's built around a weird set of rules that have built up from the conditions of our negotiations, the conditions, the way that parties talk to each other, the way that the system has been kind of bastardized in our current political environment. And we're now trying to elect people to change the sport. How do we get it to be back where it's a marathon, where you train and condition and go a long distance and achieve some marked goal at the end of this long marathon that not everybody can run a marathon, but we can if we work on it. And how do we get that out of what is essentially a bike sprint, where people are playing gimmicks to get to kind of a hollow, artificial solution at the end?
I'm gonna give you a different take, because I hear you. I hear what you're saying, and I feel like you're calling for like a better Minnesota. And I agree with
That's literally Mark Dayton's.
Oh, is it really?
Oh my gosh! A slogan: a better Minnesota.
Wow. Better people. Okay. Right? I like to think of us as, you know,
better process, which is the worst tagline ever.
It's the worst. I do take some pride as I travel around the country in the idea that Minnesotans are generally thought of as, you know, nice people, people who are pragmatic, people who are thoughtful, people who can have discourse. Mm-hmm. So I recently was in Tennessee, I was in Georgia, I was in North Carolina. All of these are Republican-dominated places, where essentially the majority of voters living outside of those core urban areas vote, you know, 60-40, 55-45 on the red side, of the Republican side of the ledger. And the urban areas vote like 80-20 Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. So here's what I'm looking at in Minnesota. I think that what we're seeing right now has a chance of just getting worse, in the sense that, you know, you have Governor Dayton's veto, which I think plays well in that 80-20 Democrat area of the state, but is going to maybe be part of that shift where instead of a 50-50 split outstate, we now get to the 55-45 Republican. It doesn't take much to turn this whole state red.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we are in danger of, and let me give you two contrasting models. I think Minnesotans in the past, if we go back to like the Reagan elections where we voted for Mondale, you know, we voted for Carter in national landslides, I think we would have thought ourselves more as like a Midwestern version of Massachusetts, right? Massachusetts is deeply liberal state
with this progressive
tradition. We've got Humphrey, we've got Mondale.
We're a moralist state like Massachusetts.
We're a moralist state.
Yeah.
Now I feel like we're becoming more like a Kansas or a North Carolina, mm-hmm. or where there's this deep partisanship forming, and we've kind of, you know, aligned ourselves geographically into these real kind of cocoons where we have a deep urban center, and then we have this, you know, basically reflecting the demographics of the country. Are we special, or are we just late to the trend that everybody else has gone through? And I, that gives me a lot of angst because I would like to be special. I would like to think our politics is different and special. And I think in the way you're describing, mm-hmm. but I feel like we are essentially becoming a reflection of this broader national trend, which really is polarization and dysfunction at the end of the day.
Well, once a steak goes into the grinder, it's a hot dog, you know.
You can't put that back.
And I think Minnesota is a part of the United States of America, and our politics is going in that direction. I mean, it's happening. I mean, I don't where what is. I mean, you could look and say California was kind of an interesting environment years ago politically. It was more Republican certainly than it is now. And you can look at New England used to be solid Republican, but they were liberal. And then you've had the deep Democratic South, and you had all these unique. Minnesota was unique. Wisconsin was unique in its own. It was progressive. La Follette, man. You know, it was. It was all these unique regional attributes to our politics, and now we all watch the same cable news channels and use the same cable news techniques to advance bludgeon our policies through. And you know, I think what we saw in the end of this session that blew up and turned into a big fire was the Dayton and Doubt saying, you know, screw it, we're going to do this the ugly way, and we're going to use the techniques that we've been watching other people use against us, and we're just going to use them point blank on each other at the end and blame the other side, and let's see how it goes in the election. It's just miserable, frankly, to watch.
And I'll say this. I see you edging towards the mic, so I think we're getting on time. The reason I love doing this show and the reason I will keep doing it is I do have this inner feeling that like Minnesota is a special place. Like we are special people. We are different. And part of that difference is the ability to not only reach consensus mm-hmm. and to talk to each other. You know, you've got a liberal and a conservative who are making a concerted effort here to like start with places of mutual agreement. And when we don't agree, at least identify the other's point of view and have respect for it and try to, you know, not demolish the other, but actually build up on the other. I feel like this radio show and what we're trying to do here, I hope, is part of what Minnesotans in general are trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that maybe is a little bit naive of me and a little bit like thinking the best of people. But I mean, that's what if I defined like what being a Minnesotan is and how that's different than being a North Carolinian or a Massachusetts or a Californian or what have you, it's that. And there's a part of me that feels like we're losing that. And I feel like Dig Deep and the work we're doing mm-hmm. is really trying to push back on that in a way that is important to me.
Yeah, well, and I think you have to look at going to the history, the Nonpartisan League, which became eventually the Farmer Labor Party, but initially their strategy was to run good government candidates, progressive good government candidates in both parties, and try to, in any primary, endorse a candidate in that party that was going to advance a common set of values that at least was perceived as such. And so I'm not saying bring back the Nonpartisan League, though it would... I'd probably vote for it, but
I would vote for Jesse Ventura right now. I mean, like I would vote for anything, not our two main parties, really.
Yeah, and right now, and boy, the state of the third parties is so poor
now. It's so sad. It makes me really sad.
So, you know, I think there's room.
Industrial hemp.
That's right.
It's like we're the, you know, I hope that now that they've kind of won the pot argument, they can just drop it and get on to like substantive things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, so I you know, I'm just hoping for I got my favorites on both sides. It's like watching the playoffs, you know. I got my favorites on both sides, and I hope we get a good.
It's like watching the playoffs where the Twins aren't in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And I'd like to see. I just like to see a good series.
I want the Yankees to lose, but everybody else, I could find a reason to.
Yeah. Lose. Yeah. 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 Go Washington Capitals.
Right.
So we're getting ready for a live Dig Deep event that will be at the KAXC studios, and we'll be talking more about politics and the races that are heating up. We'll talk about the governor's race and District 8. It'll be live Tuesday, June 12th. You can hear it on the radio, or you can join us here in Grand Rapids. It's probably going to be a beautiful night.
Hope so.
For a road trip to...
We'll see if those all those liberals that send us emails critiquing me show up and have all kinds of problems with the...
And we'd also like the conservatives who critique Aaron
to
attend.
No, please show up. Yeah, I could use some some help.
All of you. So you are invited to join us or listen online. And we appreciate you listening to Dig Deep, especially this extra podcast edition.
It's a lot of fun. I get, you know, my network of people like this too. And they're not from Minnesota. So I kind of feel like I'm representing, you know, outside the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you and I have done podcasts together, not here. And I for some reason, when we get here, we become a little less Minnesotan in our accents. I listened to one podcast we did years ago.
Yeah,
where it's just thick.
I did your podcast.
Yeah, it's just thick. And, you know, so maybe I don't realize it when we're together, but when I listen to it, I'm like, oh my gosh, we sound very Minnesotan at times.
I think I'm triggered by fellow Minnesotans when I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. And
I travel up to Canada and I'm kind of triggered by that. They start talking and I'm like, oh, I find myself just really like at ease speaking there because you can slide right into it and it's very normal.
And I should say you can check out Aaron's blog, minnesotabrown.com. We've mentioned his writing there, and also strongtowns.org, and sign up for a podcast. Chuck, you guys do a podcast how often? A
couple times a week.
Okay. You can find all that information there. Thanks.
Thank you.